What is the difference between, in one word, and it's amazing how many of these questions can be answered in one word, but in one word, what is the difference between the short run and the long run? See, the short run is a period of time that we cannot change our plant capacity. Now, in the short run, certain resources are fixed. All right? Now, some are variable. So, you know, they're not all fixed in the short run. See, for example, what kinds of things can a firm do and still be in the short run? Can they hire more workers? Yes or no?
Yeah.
Yes, they can. What else can they do in the short run? Can they utilize more of the maybe machines that they have, or fewer machines? I mean, you can either go up or down. Or can they rearrange their work area to maybe make things more productive? See, all these things can be done in the short run, because by hiring more workers or using machines that we've already got that maybe that are before we're lying idle, we can alter our output, right? We can either increase our output or decrease our output, but we're not changing our capacity to produce. Whatever the capacity is, it is. Now, if you're talking about increasing production, you can hire more workers, go from one shift to two shifts, from two shifts to three shifts. You can rearrange the machines or how workers interact with one another. But you're going to reach a point where you cannot increase your production anymore. There's nothing you can do to increase your production unless you do what? Now, how do we go from the short run to the long run? How are we going to increase our production beyond a certain point? We're going to increase our capacity to produce. How do we do that? Well, we'll add another room onto our factory. Move into a bigger building. Buy more machines and perhaps up to more efficient machines, up-to-date machines, modern machines. See, once we do that, once we replace our old computers with new computers, we've changed our capacity to produce. See, once we move into a larger plant, we've increased our capacity to produce. And once we increase our capacity, we have gone into the long run. So the short run and the long run does not involve time. The short run is not simply a short period of time, and the long run a long period of time. The short run could be 100 years, and the long run could be only 1 week. Now, why is this an important distinction? And this is what you really got to catch hold of here, or you're going to time is going to be hard on you. What time frame do we always assume? The short run or the long run? The short run. In economics, when we're talking about this or talking about that, we are always assuming the short run. Now, if I'm talking about this and that, I don't have to say, well, in the short run, this and that and etc. But if I'm going to talk about the long run, then I have to say, well, in the long run, such and such and such and such. See, now these are rules of the game. Remember, economics is like playing a game, and there are rules. In order to play, you've got to know the rules. So one of the rules here is that when we're discussing economics, we're assuming the short run. Now, see, this limits our parameters. See, if we were talking about the long run, when we're talking about economic events, well, things would get hopelessly confused or complicated because, well, in the long run, anything can happen, right? Anything's possible in the long run. But if you're talking about the short run, then your parameters are well defined. You know that, well, there are certain things here that we're assuming cannot change. And we know what those things are, because those things involve capacity. See what I mean? So when we're talking about this and that, what we're doing is we're simplifying our analysis by assuming and understanding and agreeing upon the fact that we're talking about the short run. Okay, short run, a period during which at least one of the firm's resources are fixed, but really a better concept here is the word capacity rather than fixed. In the short run, certain things are fixed and other things are variable. Whereas in the long run, everything is variable. See, in the long run, everything is variable. A period during which all resources under your firm's control are variable. And now here we have a table, and this again is a review, but what does marginal product mean? First of all, what does the word marginal mean?
The last unit.
Now, what does marginal product mean? Let me give you an example of marginal product. Maybe that is best way to remember this. And this is something we talked about in one of our first lectures. Let's say that this room is a restaurant. It's a new... we're going to open up this new restaurant. And each table here represents a table at a restaurant. Why is this a short-run analysis? Because we've got four walls, we've got X number of square feet, we've got X number of tables, X number of chairs, see what I mean? See, you know, these things are fixed. So this is a short-run analysis. We want to know, in this new restaurant of ours, how many waiters are we going to hire to maximize our profit? We are going to use marginal analysis. When we use marginal analysis, where do we begin?
The first unit.
We always begin at the beginning, and the beginning is the first unit. Now, in this case, it would be the first waiter. So now the question becomes, should we or should we not hire the first waiter? And what's the answer? Now, when you say making money, what do you mean? Be more
profit.
A profit. In other words, the question is, how much is that first waiter going to bring into our restaurant, and how much are we going to have to pay that first waiter, correct? Now, the amount of money that waiter is going to bring into our restaurant, in other words, the difference between if we had no waiters and one waiter is how much that one waiter is bringing into our restaurant, correct? Now, the amount of money that waiter is bringing into a restaurant is called marginal product. So when you're thinking of marginal product, just think of that waiter in the restaurant. All right? How much is that waiter going to bring into our restaurant? Now, if we calculate that he's going to bring into our restaurant more money than we have to pay him, then we say, okay, we'll hire the first waiter. So now what do we do? See, I want to know how many waiters to hire to maximize profits. So now what do I do? The next one, right? See, we go to the second waiter. We say, okay, should we hire a second waiter? And what's the answer?
Yes, if he's bringing in more
money. Exactly, yes, if he's bringing in more money than we have to pay him. Now, in economic jargon, we would say that we will hire the second waiter if marginal product is greater than the wage. Now, when I say marginal product, I'm talking just about the second waiter, right? The first waiter is not important. An average is not important. A total is not important. All I'm interested in is the last waiter. In this case, it would be the second waiter. So if marginal product is greater than wage, we say, okay, we'll hire a second waiter. Now what do? We go to the
next waiter.
Next waiter, right? The third waiter. Now, if the third waiter's marginal profit is greater than wage, we'll hire a third waiter and the fourth waiter and the fifth waiter. Now, let's say by the sixth waiter, we figure that marginal product is less than the wage. So what do we decide to do? Don't hire the fifth waiter. So how many waiters did we hire to maximize our profit? Four. See, we came up with an answer. Because that, see, the original question was, how many waiters are we going to hire to maximize our profit? And the answer was four. But the answer is not what's important. What's important is our thought process. See, so much of economics involves a thought process. So much of economics simply involves learning how to think a certain way. In this case, we're learning to use marginal analysis. Now, we're not actually not learning to use marginal analysis because, in reality, you've used marginal analysis to make decisions from the first day you were born. But you were perhaps not aware that you were using marginal analysis, and you certainly couldn't explain how your brain worked to make certain decisions. And that's really all we've done now. We've learned to explain how we think unconsciously. Okay, so here we have this table. Now, a big part of what we're moving into, this price output determination segment of this course, is learning how to glean information from a table or a graph. Let's look at column 3 here. Column 3 is labeled marginal product. And this says that marginal product, as we go from 3 laborers to 4 laborers, is 3. Now, how do we get 3 as our marginal product as we went from 3 laborers to 4 laborers? 3 workers to 4 workers. How do we calculate marginal product?
Are you looking at the change in the total product?
Yeah, exactly right. If marginal product means how much we made on the last unit, then marginal product is the difference between total product of the present unit and total product of the previous unit, right? Because that's the difference. That's the change, correct? So if our total product at 3 workers is 9 and our total product at 4 workers is 12, then how much have we added to our total product by hiring the fourth worker?
4.
And that's how we get 4 as marginal product. All you got to remember when you, like you on a test, you might have a table and you've got numbers, but not all the numbers are given to you in column 3, like marginal product. And the test might say, okay, at so many units, what's marginal product?
How did you get that
again? It's marginal product is always the difference between total product of the present unit and total product of the previous unit.
Okay.
So, 12 minus 9 is 3. 12 would be the total product of at 4 workers, and 9 would be the total product at 3 workers. Okay, so what is my marginal product? I get ahead of myself on these slides, so I can't, you know, follow it exactly. The change in your total product that occurs when the usage of a resource increases by one unit, all other resources constant. See, what we're doing here, like with our waiter, we had a restaurant, and okay, how many waiters are we going to hire? Well, we were only concentrating on the waiter. We were assuming that everything else stayed the same, right? We were saying, okay, just concentrating on this one in a waiter's, what's our costs and what's our return, assuming that nothing else changes. Okay, what is increase in marginal returns? This occurs when your marginal product increases as more units of resource are employed, other resources constant. Increasing marginal returns. What this means is, at least beyond a certain point. Now, this may not be true starting from zero, but beyond some point, as we add resources, our marginal product will increase. Now, there's lots of reasons for this. remember I talked about way back how Henry Ford utilized the assembly line to increase productivity, and we had to, when we hired a lot of workers and divided up the labor, then we greatly increased productivity. Well, that's an example of increasing marginal returns. As we hire more workers, one way that we can increase our productivity is to divide up the labor. See, if you have only a few workers, then a worker might have to do multiple tasks, and it's harder to divide up the labor. But the more workers we hire, at least up to a point, then we can divide up the labor. And as I showed you with the Henry Ford example and the assembly line, is that by dividing up the labor and eliminating non-productive activity, as well as other factors that came into it, then we could increase productivity. And so that is an example of increasing marginal returns. We take on more of a resource. Like, what's one reason why a Walmart can buy... I mean, remember, Walmart's a good example because Walmart doesn't produce anything. I mean, Walmart is the most basic business concept of history, right? I mean, all Walmart does is they buy wholesale, they buy from producers, and they sell retail, right? I mean, that's pretty simple. So why can Walmart charge a lower price? I mean, what's one reason that Walmart can charge a lower price selling the same things as other businesses? Yeah, one good reason, exactly. One good reason is Walmart buys in quantity. They buy huge, they're so large that they can buy huge quantities, and if a wholesaler can sell in large quantities, then they can sell and still make a lot of money by charging less per unit. And then Walmart takes that savings and lowers their price to underprice the competitors, you see, and that's how it increases its volume and therefore increases its profits. So that's all an example of increasing marginal returns. What is the law of diminishing marginal returns? The law of diminishing marginal returns says that as more units of a variable resource are combined with a given amount of fixed resources, eventually. Now what that means, beyond some point, the additional units will yield smaller marginal product. Now, a good example of this might be, let's say that this room were a factory, and each of you work for me, and let's say this is an accounting firm. So we're doing taxes, and each of you are working for me, and you know we're doing taxes, but none of you have a computer. I'm assuming, let's make it real simple and assume that you've gone through New River and you do know how you're very familiar with computers and different, maybe, you know, business accounting software. But for now, you're doing everything by hand. Now, if I were to bring on a computer with an accounting software on it and give it to one of you, what would happen to my productivity? It would go up, right? You become more efficient. Now, how about if I let's say there, just to keep it simple, let's say there's 10 of you, and so I bring on a second computer. Well, again, I'm going to increase productivity, right? A third computer, fourth computer, and that will probably be true up to a 10th computer. Now, how about an 11th computer? Now, there's only 10 of you. See, in other words, if I take on more computers, I'm going to increase my productivity 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but that's true only up to a certain point. Because beyond that point, in this case, beyond 10, if I take on an 11th computer, a 12th computer, and a 13th computer, you see, I'm adding, now I've gone beyond that point, and instead of increasing productivity, I'm actually going to decrease productivity. Or at least the amount of return that I'm going to make with each additional unit is going to become less and less and less. See how that works? And this is what is called the law of diminishing marginal returns. And here we have a picture, a graph of this. And see, on this graph, what it says here, if you look at total product, is we hire units of a resource, our total product goes up. But beyond a point, as we continue to add that resource, our total product goes down. Now again, what time frame are we talking about? The short run. So you've always got to keep in mind that we're talking here about the short run. And in short run, certain things are fixed. So in this case, we're saying is that we're going to change one resource and assuming everything else is fixed. Because in the long run, is anything fixed? No, in the long run, anything can change, right? But we're not talking about the long run here. We're talking about the short run. All right, now more practice with interpreting tables. So let me go through each of these columns. We've got six columns here. First column is tons, 2, 5, 9, etc. Second column, we have fixed costs. Now notice fixed cost is always $200. In other words, no matter how many tons we produce or how many workers we hire, our fixed cost is always $200. Now how come that is? Because what does the word fixed mean? It doesn't change, right? In other words, we see in the short run, we have fixed costs and we have variable costs. Now, in the long run, is there any such thing as a fixed cost? No, in the long run, everything is variable. But in the short run, certain things we can define as fixed, but they're not going to change. So what we're saying here in this case is that our fixed cost is always $200. All right, third column, we have a quantity of workers, 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. And in the fourth column, we have a VC, which stands for variable cost. Now, our variable cost is increasing 100, 200, 300 as we increase our number of workers, which would make sense, right? I mean, variable cost means, well, these vary with the level of output. So as we increase our output, our variable costs are going to increase. We're going to use more energy and hire more workers, so our costs are going to increase, correct? Okay, total costs. Total cost at two units is $300. Now, how do we get that $300?
You add the variable cost
to hiring the worker. And the fixed cost. Yeah, see, total cost is fixed cost plus variable cost. So we add column 2 and column 4 to get column 5. Right? Fixed cost plus variable cost equals total cost. Yeah, the number of work. Yeah, wage. Yeah, exactly. Now, this says that our marginal cost at two units is $50. Now, how do we get $50? Now, there's a little wrinkle on this one. There's a your author is throwing you a curveball here. What's the
cost
about
quantity?
No. How do we get marginal cost of $50? We're looking at how much each ton is costing us to produce. When we hired the first worker, we're able to produce 2 tons, correct?
Uh-huh.
Now, marginal cost is how much it costs us to produce the last unit, correct? Unit. But how many units are we talking about here?
It's 2 units.
2 units, right? Now, how much did our marginal cost increase as we went from 0 to 2 units?
100.
So what's 100 divided by 2?
50.
And that's how we get 50. Now, that's a real wrinkle. I mean, I mean, if this were me, I wouldn't have given you this curve so early in the game. But I would have gone 0 tons, 1 ton, 2 tons, 3 tons, 4 tons. And it would have been a lot easier. But here, we're, you know, he's going from 0 tons to 2 tons to 5 tons. And so, it's a little more complicated. So what you got to do, let's do one more.
How did they get 33.3?
Yeah, well, that's what we're going to do. How much, as we went from 2 tons to 5 tons, how much our total cost increase?
By 3.
But we went from 2 to 5, so what's the change?
Three.
And what's 100 divided by 3? 33.3. See, in this case, we're saying, at one worker, we can produce 2 tons, but at 3 workers, we can produce 9 tons. So how many tons have we increased as we went from 2 workers to 3 workers?
4.
Well, from 2 to 3, it would be 4. See? Now, our total cost increased how much? As we went from 2 workers to 3 workers?
$100.
So what's 100 divided by 4? $25. And that's what we got here in this sixth column. Well, what he's doing is, we're hiring more workers, correct? We're hiring one worker, then 2 workers, and then 3 workers, but our total output in terms of tons is not increasing by 1 ton, 2 ton, 3 ton, correct? It's increasing by 2 tons, and then it goes up to 5 tons, and it goes up to 9 tons. You see what I mean? And so we're looking at, okay, now what is happening to our marginal product as we go from this number of workers to the next number of workers, like from 2 workers to 3 workers, or 3 workers to 4 workers.
You went from your most recent quantity that you're producing.
Yeah, yeah. What you're possibly doing. Yeah, yeah. Because that's what the margin means. We're always looking at the last unit, but in this case, units are, as we hire more, we can't, our tons go up from 5 to 9, 4, but we can't hire a fourth of a worker to get an increase of 1 ton. So, we can only hire a whole worker, see? But our tonnage happens to increase, multiple times. See, in this case, 4 units instead of just 1 unit. So, does this make sense? A big part of this unit is simply, a lot of questions are going to be, okay, here's a table, and here are a bunch of questions. And can you glean from the table the answers to these questions? Now, fortunately, you can get a lot of practice. You've got these PowerPoint slides, and then in my practice tutorials, PowerPoint tutorials, I give you lots of practice, and I explain in detail each answer. 50 of those, for this chapter. You've got your practice quizzes in Blackboard, as well as if you're willing to avail yourself to many of the author's learning materials. So you've got a lot of practice. Remember, there are 3 parts to this course, right? The lecture gives you the overview, the textbook gives you the details, and the supplemental materials give you the practice. And economics is more like mathematics than it is history, in that you've got to learn the concepts, the terminology, and then practice, right? You can't pass a mathematics course without, even though you understand the concepts, if you don't have practice working out problems, you probably won't do well on the test. Well, same with economics. You got to practice. Okay, when marginal cost increases, does average cost increase? If marginal, now, cost, and here's marginal cost. Marginal cost is higher than average cost. Okay, marginal cost goes down like this. My right hand is higher than my left hand. And I'm lowering I'm doing this for the purpose of the MP3 file, the audio file. Okay, my right hand is higher than my left hand, And my right hand is marginal cost. And I'm going to lower my marginal cost, but my marginal cost is still above my average cost. Now, what's going to happen to my average cost? It's going to increase. Now, even though my marginal cost decreased, why did my average increase? Higher. Because the margin was greater than the average. See, it makes no difference if the margin is increasing or decreasing. The difference is it greater than or less than the average? You know, it's just like on a test. Let's say the average test is a 70, and someone takes a makeup test. Now, we don't really have makeup tests in here. Well, I guess we do. Maybe take it beyond the deadline. But anyway, a student takes a makeup test, and let's say the student scores a 76. Now, what happens to the class average? Now, I'm not sure I said that right. Let's say the class average is a 70, and someone takes a makeup test. And let me change that. Let's say they score 100. What happens to the class average? It increases. Let's say the class average increases to 76. All right, another student takes a makeup test. Now, what's this student represent? The marginal student, right? All right, now this last student scores, let's say, a 90. Now, a 90 is less than the 100, correct? The first student scored 100, second student scores a 90, but the 90 is greater than 76. So what happens to the class average? It still increases. Even though the margin decreased from 100 to 90, the average increased. Now, what we're talking about here is relationships. You've got to understand relationships. Also, keep in mind that this is an introductory chapter. Now, we're not using these things here in order to answer questions. Now, what are we going to do in the next chapter? We're going to take these concepts and use these concepts to answer certain questions. But in this chapter, we're not doing that. In this chapter, we're just learning the concept. It's like learning a foreign language. Before you learn a foreign language, you first got to learn the vocabulary and the sentence structure, correct? Now, after you learn the vocabulary and after you learn the sentence structure, then you can start talking the language, correct? But, see, so that's what we're doing here. In this chapter 7, we're just learning the vocabulary and learning the concepts. And then the next chapter is on price output determination in a perfectly competitive market. And then that's when we start to ask certain questions. How many units are we going to produce to maximize a profit? What are profits be your point of maximization? Or is this a case of loss minimization? What are losses if it's a case of loss minimization? Should we stay open or should we close down? See, certain decisions. And that's what we're going to do in the next chapter. But you can't do that unless you first got the foundation here in this chapter. Okay, if marginal cost is less than the average would decrease. So I've already talked about that. And here is a picture of this. And what we see here is our total cost, you see, as we produce more units, Our total in the top graph, it shows that our total cost increased at a decreasing rate. But then after a certain point, our total cost increased at an increasing rate. And and this shows us again, it's the law of diminishing returns. And notice here that we have a curve of variable cost and a curve of total cost, and the difference between these two curves is our fixed cost. And notice that the distance between our variable cost curve and our total cost curve is always the same because our fixed costs never change, right? That's why we call them fixed. Now, in the bottom graph, it's really showing us the same thing, but instead of showing us two total cost and then variable cost, it's simply showing us our marginal cost curve. Now notice here, with a marginal cost curve as we increase units. It's shown on the horizontal axis. As we produce more units, our marginal cost goes down, correct? But beyond a certain point, as we produce more units, what happens to our marginal cost? It starts to increase. Again, why? Because of law of diminishing returns. Okay, what is average fixed cost? Fixed cost divided by output is an average. We're dealing with three units here: averages, totals, and margins. Now, before, your mind would normally think in terms of averages and totals. But now we're going to talk also in terms of the margin. So what all your author's doing here is defining, okay, what is an average? What is a total? What is an average? What is a margin? And an average is simply the total, in this case, fixed cost divided by units. Q is units, quantity. Q stands for quantity. What is average variable cost? Well, it's a total variable cost. Now, we don't have a T here. Sometimes it's TVC, and sometimes it's just VC like this. But it means total variable cost. You take our total variable cost divided by units, and that's our average variable cost. Where's our average total cost? Average total cost is average fixed cost plus average variable cost is average total cost. Now, what's important here is, and this is highly important, if you're going to really do this right, what's coming up, always compare like units. We compare an average with an average, a total with a total, and then we've got the margin. Okay, but always compare like units. You know, apples with apples and oranges with oranges. And if you can learn to do that, then this whole thing that's coming up is a whole lot easier. Wow, look at this. Now, here's a table, and if you first look at this table, we've got 1, 2, 4, 5, 6, 7 columns here. And we've got several rows, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 rows. And we got numbers in each one, and it looks overwhelming. If you just look at that whole thing and say, wow, but if you break it down into each unit, then it's really quite simple. So let's do that. In the first column, we have a quantity, 0, 2, 5, 9, 12, 14, 15. Now the first part of this table really is the same as the previous table we looked at, but we've just simply added to it. So in the second column, we have variable costs. And variable cost is 0, 100, 200, 300, 400, 500, 600. So it goes up 100 with each a multiple of units. Marginal cost. Well, I'm not going to go through the same thing because this is the same as the last table, right? Marginal cost, we calculate the same way. But now these are a little different. Average fixed cost. Now, how do we get average fixed costs in 1, 2, 3, 4, and our fifth column? At the quantity of 2, our average fixed cost is 100. How do we know that? Well, what's our total cost at 2 units? At quantity of 2? Okay, now what is our fixed cost at 2 units? Our total cost is 300, and our variable cost is what? 100. So what's our average total cost at 2 units? Okay, variable cost plus fixed cost equals total cost, correct? We know our variable costs and our total cost at quantity of 2, correct? Looking at columns 2 and 3. What is our fixed cost at 2 units? Our total cost is 300. Our variable cost is 100. So what's our fixed cost? 200. Now our average fixed cost is number of units, in this case our total fixed cost, divided by number of units. So what's 100 divided by 2? 100, right? And that's how we get 100 as our average fixed cost in the one, two, three, in the fifth column. See how you got to think about this, these things? You just got to sit down and just think, okay, now what, you know, what is average fixed cost? Well, let me see. Average fixed cost is the difference between total fixed cost and variable cost. And I'm given variable cost and total cost, so I just take the difference between the two, and then I get fixed cost, and then I divide that by two to get average fixed cost. Of course, once you do this once, do you have to do it again? Well, no, because no matter what unit you're talking about, what is your fixed cost? It stays the same, right? Fixed cost is always going to be the same. That's why we call it fixed. Y'all with me on this? In the next column, we have average variable cost. Now, and the next time we have average variable cost. Now, what is average variable cost? Well, it's total cost divided by number of units, right? Now, in the third column, we get total costs. So you take our total cost and divide column 3 by column 1, and that gives us average variable cost. And then in the last column, we got average total cost. Well, what's average total cost? Average total cost is our total cost divided by number of units. Well, we've got our total cost in column 3, and our quantity in column 1, so we just take our total cost divided by number of units to get average total cost. So see, if you break this down, I mean, it looks complicated with all these numbers thrown out, you know, at once, but if you break it down, then it is really quite simple.
How'd you say you got average cost again? You know, total cost divided by quantity?
Yeah, because that's the definition of average total cost. See, like at quantity 2, total cost is 300. Well, 300 divided by 2 is 150.
Okay.
So you got, again, you know, it's just knowing the difference between a total and average and a margin. We're really, we're going to have lots of practice with this, but here we have an average total cost curve that's U-shaped and an average variable cost curve that's U-shaped. Now, being U-shaped, that means as we increase units of output, our cost in the average goes down beyond a certain point, but beyond that certain point, our average starts to increase. Now, why is that? Because of the law of diminishing returns. The law of diminishing returns says that as we, from zero, as we increase our output, our resources, our cost in the average will go down beyond a certain point. But then after that point, our cost, as we continue to add that resource, our cost will increase. Remember the example I gave of the computers and the accounting firm? Now, notice here that our marginal cost curve is also U-shaped, by the way, and our marginal cost curve is U-shaped for the same reason, because of the law of diminishing returns. Notice that our marginal curve intersects our average curves at their lowest point. Why is that a mathematical necessity? Why is the marginal cost intersect our average curves at their lowest point? Because if the margin is greater than the average, what happens to the average? It increases. See, notice here, if you concentrate on the average total cost curve and the marginal cost curve, where they intersect, if you go to the right, notice that the margin is always greater than the average. Correct? Now, if the margin is greater than the average, what happens to the average? It increases. Now, notice to the left of this intersection, the margin is less than the average. See, here's the margin, and here's the average up here. Now, if the margin is less than the average, what happens to the average? It goes down. And so it's a mathematical necessity that the margin curve intersects the average curve at its lowest point. Now, again, this, you don't know why this is important at this point. So all we're doing is, I'm saying, these are certain relationships here. And you've got to understand, now later on, we're going to use our understanding of these relationships to answer specific questions. But we're not there yet. You know, in other words, there's a reason for us to know these things. You don't know why at this point, but you just got to take my word for it, but there are reasons, which you'll find out in the next chapter. See, what is the long-run average cost curve? A curve indicating the lowest average cost of production at each level of output when the firm size is allowed to vary. So in other words, what this is showing us is how the long-run average cost curve is calculated. The long-run average cost curve is calculated by summing up the short-run average cost curves. And this is really what we get. In other words, here, and this is slide 40, and in the blue line is our average total cost curve in the long run. Now, see, if we're talking about the long run, by the rules of the game, what do I have to say? In the long run, correct? So in the long run, how do we derive our average total cost curve? By the summation of our short-run average total cost curves. Because they're going to change in the long run as our, you know, as things, you know, anything can change in the long run. Now, what are economies of scale? Forces that cause reduction in a firm's average cost as scale of operation increases in the long run. Now, the law of diminishing returns is a short-run term. Economies of scale is a long-run term. But the concepts are the same. See, in the long run, as we increase resources, our costs on the average go down. But beyond a certain point, as we increase resources, our costs will increase. Now, that's true in the short run, but it's also true in the long run, but we use different terms. Law of diminishing returns is a short-run term. Economies of scale is a long-run term. Now, there's economies of scale and diseconomies of scale. As we grow, we experience economies of scale. But beyond some point, as we continue to grow, we begin to experience diseconomies of scale. See, this is what we mean by diseconomies of scale. And here is, I'm almost near the end here. That's why I'm doing this. Economies of scale and diseconomies of scale. What is minimum efficient scale? The lowest rate of output at which firms takes full advantage of economies of scale, which would be the bottom of our long-run curve, which looks like this, our long-run average cost curve. And that is the end. So I did rush through that end a bit. I might review that next time maybe, but we'll get more practice with this. But this does end the lecture.